This is Jim Inkster. Coming today, we will visit with State Representative John Bell Edwards of Amite, candidate for governor in 2015 and leader of the House Democratic Caucus in the Louisiana Legislature. We'll talk with Representative Edwards about his campaign, first announced on this show back in February, and what's going on in the state that needs to be addressed by John Bell Edwards, since he wants to lead the citizenry of Louisiana. Also on the show, we'll have some folks who are running in a different way, Matt Manning and Craig Watson. They're involved with the Baton Rouge Beach Marathon, and we will talk with them about running in Baton Rouge, on the streets, and beyond. All this, but now the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, it's 877-217-5757. Online, you may reach us at inkstershow@wrkf.org. Our guest is John Bell Edwards, state representative from Amite, representing District 72 in the Louisiana House since 2008. He is head of the Democratic Caucus in the Louisiana Legislature in the House of Representatives, graduate of Amite High School, where he was valedictorian. His bachelor's degree in engineering is from the United States Military Academy in West Point, New York. Good morning, Representative Edwards.
Good morning, Jim. It's a beautiful morning, too, isn't it?
Maybe in West Point, New York, it is, but today it's a little challenging out there. But, you know, we need character builders every now and then.
Absolutely. I was telling my wife when I left the house this morning that that this is one day when I don't miss being an infantryman in the Army in the woods, you know, because you can be, if it's cold, you can stay warm. But if it's cold and wet, it's just miserable.
It is, and you've done the deal. You served in the Army for how long?
I was an active duty Army officer and infantry officer for 8 years, and did the Airborne Ranger stuff, and ended up commanding a company in the 82nd Airborne Division, a rifle company there. And I tell you, it was a great experience. A lot of character building moments, as you mentioned.
Well, it's been a long time since we've had a military a veteran of your kind in the governor's mansion. Do you think it's something that would be an issue, or something you will accent when you run for governor earnestly over the next 2 years?
Well, I'm certainly gonna let people know who I am and what I've done, and that's a big part of that. And I will be very honest and tell you that the fact that I am a veteran, that I graduated from West Point, that seems to you know, stir up interest in folks and learning more about me and that sort of thing. So I'm proud of the fact that I served. I'm proud of having graduated from West Point, but it seems like that's going to be, you know, some assistance to me as I move around the state and introduce myself and ask people to take me seriously. You know, when they find out about me, the fact that I was in the Army as I was, then it just helps.
Well, when we look at these mock polls for governor in 2015, and we're now less than 2 years away from the election, we've got David Vitter, didn't serve in the military. John Kennedy didn't serve in the military. Jay Darden didn't serve in the military. In days past, this would be a deciding issue. Today, I don't think it matters as much as it used to, but with all things being equal, you're certainly not going to shy away from telling people you're a proud graduate of West Point.
No, and look, the fact that those gentlemen didn't serve doesn't mean that they're bad people or that they're not qualified. But I do think it is a positive to have served. I think it's something to be proud of, and so certainly I'm going to let people know. You know, we have about 400,000 veterans in the state of Louisiana, veterans especially appreciate those who have served, and I'm not going to tell you that it's some huge advantage, but it's certainly a positive factor, and I will let people know that I did serve, you know, I've served in the House of Representatives on the Military and Veterans Affairs Committee too, and so I've seen what happens when there are cuts to veterans programs. And I know how important it is that we keep our war veterans homes running and fully staffed and funded, and that we run our cemeteries and our parish service offices around the state so that our veterans can get the help they need to access benefits. And so I've done a lot of work as a legislator on these things as well.
What issues beyond veterans issues are first and foremost right now in our state?
Well, I think what's on everybody's mind is just the dismantling of state institutions that afford people greater opportunities for a better life here in Louisiana, principally higher education. You know, we're spending $700 million less state general fund dollars on higher education this year than we spent 5 years ago. And that's a disaster. I mean, we cannot be the state we want to be if we continue to move in that direction. And in fact, if we change direction today, we're going to be a long time trying to overcome it. And that is despite the fact that kids are paying over 60% more in tuition and fees to attend college than they did in 2008. But we've only replaced half the dollars that we've cut. And so there's still $350 million less from all sources being spent on higher education in Louisiana today. And the result is we have university presidents and system presidents who are spending their time trying to figure out how to keep the lights on. They're not working trying to figure out how to deliver a better education. And because it's just all about survival at this point. And, Jim, I'm sure you saw the Advocate recently did a comparison between the University of Alabama and LSU just before the LSU-Alabama football game. And you can see what happens when one state properly invests in education and makes it a priority, and what happens when another state doesn't. And unfortunately, Louisiana is systematically underfunding its flagship university. You know, it's our land-grant university, and President Jenkins said before he left that he doubted that LSU would be a Tier 1 university much longer. We know that they need a couple hundred million dollars right away just to replace lost faculty members from the last several years. And a lot of those faculty members they're losing are research professors, and losing their research dollars and their research assistants, and they're going to other states where they have demonstrated a long-term commitment to higher education. So clearly, we can do better. That's going to be one of the big issues. I also believe that K through 12 is going to be a huge issue in the next election, because the so-called education reforms that the governor has pushed, by and large, are very unpopular. I think he's unnecessarily targeted the teaching profession for, you know, a lot of ridicule and that sort of thing. And I happen to regard teachers as heroes. You know, they don't control which kids come through the door and sit in their classroom, and they do the very best that they can. And I'm not telling you every teacher is doing such a good job that they ought to be kept. But the profession as a whole serves us very well, and we ought to target the teachers who need to either improve or be replaced. But I don't think it ever makes sense to try to deliver a better education in a way that alienates the teachers who are going to deliver that education. So I think we can certainly do better there, and clearly we have an obligation to make sure that when we institute a so-called reform, that we do it in a way that's constitutional, that we don't divert funds from traditional K through 12 systems in order to go to private and parochial schools in a way that is illegal.
All right. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, it's 877-217-5757. We're hearing the voice of John Bell Edwards, state representative from a meet and candidate for governor in 2015. He represents District 72 and has since 2008. He came in the day that Bobby Jindal was inaugurated as governor. John Bell Edwards took his seat in the Louisiana House. Now, it's impossible to absorb the words that you have uttered about higher education and the cuts in funding without asking why this governor has taken this course. He is a man who obviously values higher education. He got lots of it. He went to Brown University. He was a Rhodes Scholar, but it was in places outside the state of Louisiana. Why do you think the governor has taken this course as far as balancing the budget?
Well, because he can't bring himself to ever talk about new revenue. And the truth is there isn't enough recurring revenue to meet the demands of providing the services, including higher education in Louisiana. And so it's all the smoke and mirrors. It's all of the one-time money. It's borrowing money from the Morial Convention Center. It's selling state assets, whether it's hospitals or parking garages or farmland or whatever he thinks he can sell. It's all the fund sweeps. It's everything that he can do just to try to prop it up. But it just, I guess it appears to me that the commitment that he made to Grover Norquist on no new taxes is more important than the commitment he made to the people of Louisiana when he said that we would continue to fund higher education at the Southern Region average, because obviously he gave up on that a long time ago. And you know, the whole issue last year with the budget, the reason that the so-called fiscal hawks and the House Democrats worked together is because not only did higher education have a absolute funding cut again, but $500 million that was included in higher education's appropriation was coming from things like borrowing $100 million from the Morial Convention Center, lawsuit settlements, selling property, fund sweeps. And if any of that didn't materialize, that was going to be additional cuts to higher education beyond what they were going to start the year with. And, well, so we're not just showing that we don't prioritize higher education by the cuts, but by the money that we're actually appropriating for higher ed, it isn't real dollars. It's not going to be there year to year. And so it was just we reached a point where there was so much about which we as Democrats and the fiscal hawk conservatives could agree on that there was a better way forward, that we actually sat down and worked out some compromises on the budget and came up with a better budget. Now, it wasn't a work of art. It wasn't what we would have liked to be, but it was much better than what the governor proposed to us.
Now, you say he's been averse to raising taxes, and there's no doubt about that, but what taxes are palatable to you and the legislature and the electorate at large? What would you do as far as revenue enhancements?
Well, first of all, it isn't just raising taxes. I don't know that other than a cigarette tax, which does enjoy the support of the majority of the people, I don't remember that in my 6 years we've been called upon to really raise taxes. But there are other ways that you can save money through the tax code, and that's by reducing tax expenditures. The state of Louisiana has about $5 billion worth of tax expenditures on the books. Now, these are taxes that are owed, but through special legislation, many beneficiaries out there, they don't have to pay all the taxes that are owed so long as they engage in certain activities. Well, the overwhelming majority of the $5 billion are perfectly appropriate. We would never touch them, but some small percentage of that, clearly we're not getting the bang for the buck that we had envisioned when we enacted those tax expenditures. And when we reduce or eliminate a tax expenditure, that is not the same thing as raising taxes. Those taxes are already on the books. That is a savings because you're not spending through the tax code. That's why they call it a tax expenditure. He is so concerned that Grover Norquist and his organization would grade one of those tax expenditure reductions as a revenue increasing measure, that he just won't go there. And there are some that just quite honestly don't seem to make a lot of sense anymore. And quite honestly, we've got industry benefiting from tax expenditures that they will tell us too generous, and they are willing to sit down and work it out so that those expenditures can be reduced. Because they're afraid that if you don't reduce them, they're going to go away completely. So, on the tax expenditure side, there's certainly some room to grow revenue without hurting anybody.
All right, hold tight, John Bell Edwards, state representative from Amite, candidate for governor. The election now is only 22 and a half months away. We'll be back in 90 seconds with John Bell Edwards. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Inkster Show at WRKF.org works as well. And we're continuing our conversation with State Representative John Bell Edwards, Democrat from a meet and candidate for governor. John Williams writes, does Mr. Edwards have an estimate of how much money Louisiana left on the table by not supporting the Affordable Care Act and having the state implement the system? Representative Edwards, your thoughts?
Well, it's in the billions, but when you say you support the Affordable Care Act, I have to assume what they mean is the Medicaid expansion component, because there were only two decisions left to the state: whether we were going to run our own exchange and whether we were going to expand the Medicaid population in accordance with the plan of the Affordable Care Act. And that's what we have not done. We haven't done either one of those things. The good news is that we will be able to opt into the Medicaid expansion later, and I think we're going to have to do that, because you just can't leave that number of people without access to health care or expose your hospitals and clinics to having to provide care in emergency rooms, for example, and not have a reimbursement source in place. And that's what's going to happen, because, Jim, what a lot of people don't understand is 75% of the DSH dollars, the disproportionate share of hospital dollars that we currently get to treat uninsureds in our hospitals, is going to go away by 2017. And that's because they were going to use that savings to help pay for the Affordable Care Act, because we're not supposed to have the same number of uninsureds, so you shouldn't have to have the same amount of DSH payments. Well, if you don't expand the Medicaid rolls and you lose 75% of your DSH payments, you just can't make that work. And, for example, all nine of those hospital deals, the LSU hospitals, every one of those hospitals had a patient population that was more than 50% uninsured. And in the long term, you can't make them work if you don't expand the Medicaid rolls to 138% of the federal poverty level.
David in St. Francisville. Hi, David. You're on the air with John Bell Edwards. Good morning.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, John Bell.
Yes, David.
John Bell.
You're on.
I have a question. Oh, thank you, Jim. John Bell, what are your thoughts on having a constitutional convention? And I'll listen up here. Please give my regards to your father and brother.
Well, thank you, David. You know, I was at the 40th anniversary celebration last week of the 73 Constitutional Convention, and there was a lot of discussion about this. I don't believe that there is an appetite in Louisiana to have a full-blown constitutional convention. I think it may be possible to look at certain parts of the Constitution to see whether we can make a positive change. For example, it might be time to look at all of the limitations that we have in the Constitution on the way we spend money in Louisiana, because, as you know, when deep cuts are required, almost always those come either from health care or from higher education. There's a lot of people who think that there ought to be a better way to deal with that, and that the legislature and the governor ought to have more flexibility. And in order to have all the flexibility that we need, I believe that a constitutional change would be required. So something like that might be in order, but I really don't sense that there is an appetite to go in with a brand new constitution that would come out of a constitutional convention. There just doesn't seem, we haven't gotten to that point yet where there's enough support for that.
297-5633 for State Representative John Bell Edwards, graduate of West Point and of the LSU Law Center. He's a lawyer in addition to being a lawmaker. Paul in Opelousas. Paul, good morning. You're on with John Bell Edwards.
Good morning, Mr. Edwards. Good morning. And happy Thanksgiving, Jim. Question. Since Mr. Edwards says you held both positions, being a legislator and seemingly applying for governor, State Louisiana has one of the strongest governors in the country. Would you support now that the legislature start taking some of that power back and actually start, and it was not legislatively given to him, it's just a courtesy of a tradition, would you object to the legislature pulling some of that power back into their own reins and really being accountable for their job?
Well, Paul, that is a good question. We do have a strong governor, but I will tell you, a lot of it is by tradition and not because that's the way state government in Louisiana has been organized. If you look at our Constitution, I don't believe that constitutionally we have a strong governor. But in practice, we really do, because the governor typically gets to decide who's going to be the Speaker of the House, who's going to be the President of the Senate, who the committee chairmen are going to be, the composition of committees, in addition to all of the other boards and commissions and agency appointments that the governor gets to make. So what we really need is we need a legislature that will actually exert some independence that they actually have if they just want to do it. For whatever reason, that hasn't happened in Louisiana. But on a case-by-case basis with specific ideas, I would absolutely be willing to look at changes in the way the state government framework is set up in order to make sure that we don't have a governor who is too strong so that the people can be better represented through the legislature. But my 6 years in the legislature tells me that there are many, many ways that the legislature could exercise the authority that it has and be independent. It just hasn't done it. For example, there hasn't been a veto override session since the Constitutional Convention of 1973. I mean, the legislature by two-thirds vote could override any vetoes, and we don't do it. So a lot of it has to do with the legislators we elect too.
297-5633 for State Representative John Bell Edwards, HB in Denham Springs. HB, you're on.
Good morning, Mr. Bell. Couldn't we do a great deal of aid and help to the education in Louisiana if we either eliminated or reduced all of the tax credits that we're giving out, in particular the film industry, at 30%? Thank you, sir.
Well, HB, that's clearly correct. Not just the motion picture tax credit, where we underwrite 30% of the cost of those productions. You know, Jim, it wasn't like a couple years ago people just decided they had this tremendous interest in what's going on in Louisiana and all these reality shows based in Louisiana popped up. They're here because they can make more money, because our taxpayers are underwriting the costs to the tune of 30% of these productions. The problem with the way it's structured is we will pay 30% of the cost, including, for example, salaries of stars who then leave Louisiana and spend that money somewhere else. And so we probably need to reduce that tax credit, but we also need to target it so that it stays in Louisiana and jobs are created in Louisiana and that money turns over in our Louisiana economy. And we can really make that program more worthwhile and more beneficial here. But the point is well taken. We're on a trajectory right now that if we don't watch it, we will soon be spending more money on the motion picture industry in Louisiana than we will be in higher education. And that just tells you how out of whack our priorities are in Louisiana.
877-217-5757, wherever you are, for John Bell Edwards, the only Democrat who has announced he is running for governor. And the election, as noted, is less than 2 years away, 2015. John Bell Edwards began serving in the legislature the day Bobby Jindal was inaugurated as governor in 2008. A question from a listener posed online, Johanna. She asks about the Governor Foster expenditure that Governor Jindal is recommending, $2 million to house his papers in Franklin, taxpayer expenditure, something that will certainly be an offset in the budget. Is this something you're supportive of?
I do not support that expenditure, and the LSU library system should be the repository for those documents, just like it is for other governors. But you have to look at it in light of other things that we've done. If you remember, the governor line item vetoed $6 million to help the developmentally disabled across the state of Louisiana. He said we just can't afford it. You know, it just got to make this cut because we can't possibly afford helping the developmentally disabled and their parents and caretakers with $6 million appropriation. But yet we built at the expense of $10 million, a new practice facility for the Pelicans down in New Orleans, the NBA team, so that those millionaire athletes working for that billionaire owner aren't inconvenienced by having to cross the river and continue to practice at the Lario Center. And then we also have $2 million renovate a building so that they can store Governor Foster's papers. Well, to me, that the priorities are just terrible. If we had enough money to take care of our priorities, I wouldn't have a problem with spending that money down in St. Mary Parish. But clearly, that was not a priority for the state of Louisiana. It should not be.
Well, the governor is a fiscal conservative, and this would seem to be out of character for whatever reason, and presumably it's because he's loyal to Governor Foster, who, after all, did appoint Governor Jindal as health secretary when Bobby Jindal was 24 years old. In politics, is it an inevitability that you're good to people who are good to you?
Well, you can be good to them. You can be friendly with them. You can return their phone calls. You can go to their Christmas parties, but you don't have to spend taxpayer dollars on things like that. And you say that Governor Jindal is a fiscal conservative. I know that that's the reputation he wants. I know that that's what his PR machine is out there to make people believe. But you know, we've done some things in Louisiana under his leadership that have really structurally undermined this state in a way that would suggest he's anything but a fiscal conservative. I mean, he says if we don't borrow $100 million from the Morial Convention Center and put it into 1 year's budget and then pay it back over 20 years through general obligation bonds, principal and interest through the capital outlay process, that we can't possibly fund our priorities. Well, we're not supposed to borrow money in Louisiana and put it into the budget. We're supposed to have a balanced budget year to year. But that's what this so-called fiscal conservative governor wanted to do in his executive budget proposal that he gave us earlier this year. So in many, many ways, I don't accept the idea that Governor Jindal is a fiscal conservative.
All right, here's a question from Chris in LaPlace. Do you support the lawsuit by the Southeast Levee Protection Board against the oil and gas industry? Do you support that?
Well, you know, the issue with that is that the levee authority appears to have the standing to file the lawsuit. They have filed the lawsuit. I believe that the court that they filed it in has the jurisdiction to hear the matter. And if that's the case, then we ought to determine whether there is merit in the suit or not. And if there is merit, if they can prove that these oil and gas companies violated the law and state regulations and their permits when they dug canals and put in pipelines, and more particularly whenever they didn't go back and repair the damage that they had caused, you know, that is something that is for the courts. That's why courts exist. And so I do support that. Let me tell you, we have a master plan to restore our coast. It's going to cost a minimum of $50 billion over 50 years. We've got a great plan, and we don't have funding for it. And one of the reasons we had to come up with a plan is because of all the loss of our coastal area. If the oil and gas companies contributed towards that loss of our coastal area, why should they not also contribute toward the cost associated with rebuilding it? And so I think it certainly should go forward, and we should hear, find out what the courts have to say. And the oil and gas companies certainly have the means to hire the very best lawyers and the very best experts, and they get to go into court and try to convince the courts that they haven't done anything wrong. And if they can do that, then God bless them. We have to do something different to find the money. But I do believe the lawsuit should go forward, and so that we can determine whether, in fact, they should have to pay some of the costs associated with rebuilding that lost area along our coast, because that serves as the buffer to our populated areas when a hurricane comes. And the reason why flood insurance premiums are so much higher now is we've lost that buffer.
KC in Central. KC, you're on the air with Representative John Bell Edwards. Hi, KC.
Thank you. Good morning. One of the things I want to get back to is higher education. And it's been floated around that maybe what the state needs to do is have a dedicated tax put on the ballot, a statewide ballot, and let the people decide if higher education is worthwhile having, and let them fund it through a dedicated tax that is only for that purpose.
Well, that's very interesting. The problem with having a dedicated tax for any purpose is that money by its nature is fungible. And if you remember back when video poker was voted in, it was the lottery, we were supposed to spend that money on education. Well, in fact, we did, but that did not mean that the money we were already spending on education had to continue to be spent in that way. And so if we came up with a special dedicated tax for higher education, you would have to have built-in protections that the current baseline of support would not erode, you know, that you weren't going to supplant what you were already spending for higher education with the new tax. And so it would have to be structured very, very carefully. I will tell you, I don't sense in Louisiana that there is an appetite for creating some sort of a new tax of that nature. I also don't think it should be necessary. We can do things by spending money better that we have, by looking at these tax expenditures, by certainly accepting money that comes from the federal government. After all, that's our tax dollars, and we shouldn't send our tax dollars to Washington in order to subsidize health care in Arkansas and everywhere else. You know, we recently rejected $44 million that would help us expand our pre-K program in Louisiana, and cannot articulate a good reason why we turned that money down. We turned down $80 million under this governor that would have helped us to expand broadband access around the state of Louisiana. There's no good reason for that either. So we can do better in Louisiana. I don't think that a tax dedicated to higher education is the answer.
Do you support the TOPS program as it is now configured?
Well, certainly I support TOPS because it's a very good program. I question whether we can continue to afford it the way that it is configured right now. And certainly there needs to be some changes. And we have a lot of folks in the higher education community who are pushing the legislature so that the universities themselves will control tuition and not the legislature. Well, I can support that idea, but not so long as TOPS it remains the way it is, because if we're going to pay the full tuition for so many kids going to college and then allow the colleges to decide what that tuition is going to be, we would basically be giving the checkbook to our universities. And so we're going to have to look at it just like other states did. Georgia did this with its program, and other states, they had to curtail it, and because the costs grew just too high. And in a state like Louisiana, where we've had 5 years of billion-dollar deficits and anticipate the next 3 years we're going to have deficits in the half-billion-dollar range, clearly we have to look at TOPS, and we should decide whether we want to increase the standards so that fewer kids qualify for TOPS, and, you know, that we have to have a higher ACT score, for example.
We'll be back after this 90-second pause to continue with John Bell Edwards. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. A few more minutes with State Representative John Bell Edwards, and he is a candidate for governor in 2015. Dan, downtown. Dan, you're on the air with Representative Edwards.
Yes. Would you agree that Jindal, Bush, and others with their borrow and spend approach are not adherents to true conservatism of Mr. Republican Senator Robert Taft, whose orthodoxy was pay as you go?
Are we on a pay-as-you-go plan in Louisiana?
Well, I mean, we're not. We should be. And, of course, we're never going to be completely pay-as-you-go, because we're going to have the capital outlay program where you build roads and bridges and, you know, buildings at universities and hospitals and all that sort of stuff. You bond that out. But we are supposed to be pay-as-you-go as it relates to our budget each year, and we've actually moved away from that under Governor Jindal to actually borrowing money that goes into the budget each year, the money that we appropriate just to run government on a day-to-day basis, and clearly that's not supposed to happen. And so from that perspective, I have to agree.
few other inquiries from listeners. Will you be involved in Senator Landrieu's reelection quest next year?
Well, I am running for governor myself, but I will tell you that I think Senator Landrieu serves our state very well. I know that she fights for this state. I think it's incredibly important that we reelect her so that she can go back to Washington and continue the service and make sure that we have someone who can get into the White House and work with the administration for the benefit of Louisiana, because everybody else in Louisiana doesn't seem to be on good terms with the White House. And so I just think it's important. I know what she means when it comes to getting resources out of Washington to get invested here for ports, for highways, to help with everything that you can imagine, to include contracts when we have ships being built here in Louisiana that are paid for by the federal government. I mean, that doesn't just happen. Somebody has to make that happen, and Mary Landrieu has just done a wonderful job of fighting for Louisiana.
Does she have to win for the Democratic Party to remain viable statewide?
Well, I don't want to say that she has to win. First of all, I expect that she will win. I hope that she wins. Clearly it would be a big loss for the state and for the party were she not to prevail next year.
Back and forth attacks are already in full force with the senator and her challenger, and I'm reading from a press release, Representative Edwards from Landrieu's camp, saying friends of Mary Landrieu campaign manager Adam Sullivan is calling on Congressman Bill Cassidy to take down a tweet that campaign manager Joel DeGrado posted linking a photoshopped image of Senator Landrieu as Benito Mussolini. Is this what our campaign system has come to?
Well, it seems sort of silly, and all of the social media and how that plays into campaigns. You know, campaigns were bad enough, and now social media has gotten into the fray, and you know, certainly that gets abused. I haven't seen it. I heard a little bit about that. You know, it's unfortunate that with so many real issues that are confronting this state and this nation, that we have folks who aren't serious enough about their jobs that they just stick to the issues and they start doing these sorts of things that kind of distract voters, and then we wonder why voters don't turn out and vote.
Final call for John Bell Edwards, Bruce and Walden. Bruce, you're on the air. Please be brief.
Yeah, hi. It's delighted to talk with you. I'm an enthusiastic supporter. I just wanted to once again hear you weigh in on the war against the poor, particularly around the refusal to take Medicaid expansion. Which
all right, he addressed that a little earlier, but do you believe there's a war against the poor?
Well, I don't want to say there's a war against the poor. There's certainly some apathy by people in decision-making authority in Louisiana and elsewhere where they don't probably take into account the impact of certain decisions that we'll have with respect to the poor. But look, if we don't expand the Medicaid rolls and we end up having hospitals close because they can't continue to afford to provide the care the federal law is going to require them to provide when there's no reimbursement source, that hospital isn't just going to close for the poor and the uninsured and the Medicaid population. It closes for everybody, and this is going to be particularly a problem in small rural hospitals around the state of Louisiana.
Well, Representative Edwards, always good to talk with you. Hope you and your family have a good Thanksgiving, and we'll talk again soon.
Well, same to you. I've enjoyed it very much.
Thank you, John Bell Edwards, candidate for governor. And right now, the four names being mentioned most prominently as candidates for governor in 2 years are David Vitter, John Bell Edwards, John Neely Kennedy, who was on this show yesterday, and John J. Darden, the lieutenant governor of Louisiana. So that's David and the three Johns. And I did want to make a correction from yesterday in referencing a story that appeared last Thursday in the New York Times, November 21st, page A17, Headline, Mr. McAllister goes to Washington and he is wowed. By Ashley Parker, it reads, Vance McAllister, a 39-year-old high school dropout and Army veteran, managed to vanquish a formidable Republican opponent backed by the party's establishment, win a special election in Louisiana's 5th District in a 20-point landslide, and score an endorsement from the star of Duck Dynasty. As it turns out, and believe me, folks let me know yesterday, Mr. McAllister has graduated proudly from Forest Hill High School, class of 1992. He is a college dropout, and we note that correction and apologize to Mr. McAllister and his supporters. He did graduate from high school. And in studio now to talk about something that involves running of a different kind, as in marathon running, are Matt Manning and Craig Watson. They're involved with the Baton Rouge Beach Marathon and Half Marathon coming soon, as in Pearl Harbor Day, December 7th, 7 o'clock. And good morning to you, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning, Jim.
Now, Matt, you have run in 18 marathons?
Yes, sir.
18. What's your best time?
2 hours, 24 minutes, 12 seconds.
That's blowing and going, so you can move with the best of them. Certainly a better time than Paul Ryan, who I think claimed to run a sub-3-hour marathon. Turned out he was, I think, above 5 hours. But, you know, what's an hour between friends?
Thank you for pointing that out.
Well, 2:24 is your best time?
Yes.
Now, like last year, who won the Boston Marathon? I mean, what was the time that won the Boston Marathon?
Around 2 hours, 8 minutes.
Yeah, so you're right there, less than 40 seconds a mile from winning the thing, right?
Might as well be 20 miles back, though.
Yeah, well, but how do you do this? What kind of training is involved with this?
It's a lot of miles, a lot of consistency. At times, I've done 2 runs a day, up to 10 miles each time, so weeks of 100 miles a week. A lot of dedication, a lot of watching my nutrition and going to bed early and doing all the right things to keep your body in good shape.
And how do you keep your body from breaking down?
That's just luck.
Just luck.
Yeah.
How old are you?
I'm 33.
33, so you've been running a long time then.
Just since 2007.
Well, 6 years.
Yeah.
If you're running as much as you are.
It's adding up quickly.
Yeah, how long can you continue this? Marathon runners, generally, they quit running as much as you do, when they hit 40, maybe a little before that?
I think you see your peak somewhere between 30 and 40.
Yeah. Well, you were at the Boston Marathon this year, and that is an event that will always be remembered in 2013 for the tragedy. Were you close to where the people were killed?
Yeah, so I had finished about an hour and a half, 2 hours before the explosion happened, and I had showered and gone and met some friends at a bar, the usual post-race celebration. That's what the day's all about, really. And we couldn't hear the blast. We're 3 blocks away in a city, it might as well be a mile. But the TVs quickly turned over to, emergency scenes at the finish line, showing, emergency responders flying in, and it was just an incredible scene, really hard to describe.
Well, with Matt is Craig Watson. He's an attorney and is the director of the Baton Rouge Beach Marathon and Half Marathon. The race, by the way, is run for charity, and benefits go to the Baton Rouge Cancer Services and the YMCA. And Craig Watson, you've run in how many marathons?
I finished my 200th marathon about 2.5 weeks ago in Pensacola.
200th?
200.
200. And what's your best time?
When I was in law school, I ran a 3:10. I think it was 3:19:51. But since I came back in 96, my best is 3:38:56.
Well, that is an outstanding time. It's not in the same league with Matt Manning, but any time you're below 4 hours, you're right there in what, the 90th percentile. You're pretty strong.
I would think so, but I'm also 20 some years older than Mr. Matt.
So you're saying if you're 20 years younger, you could run him in the ground?
Oh, I could have smoked him.
By the way, we've had some laughs at the expense of Paul Ryan, and I had a listener point out that George Bush, when he was governor of Texas, reportedly ran a marathon in 3:44.
Yes, he did.
And he was in his 40s.
Yes,
so George Bush was good at running elections and running marathons.
It would appear.
Well, tell us about this Baton Rouge Beach Marathon. You've run all over the world. You've run in Brazil, Sweden,
Brazil,
France,
South Africa,
Germany, Thailand.
Yeah.
How does the Baton Rouge Beach Marathon compare, let's say, with the Bangkok Marathon?
A little bit cooler, not as far a plane trip if you're from the United States. Nice course, much nicer course. I think when I ran Thailand, it was through rice paddies at 4 in the morning. It was about 95 degrees. So.
You recall your time on that one?
421 something.
421.
Yeah.
And I imagine most people didn't finish because...
A lot of people did not finish because it was warm.
That's tough. Tough terrain. And the weather is, of course, a factor. Now, today, as John Bell Edwards noted earlier, it's not a very pleasant day if we're walking around. But once you start running, this isn't a bad running day, is it?
For Craig and Matt, it's perfect. We were both out there this morning, you know, one of the few that were out there. And at 40, 45 degrees, it was nice. It was good.
Okay. And the Baton Rouge Beach Marathon will start... Stanford Avenue, is that where it begins?
Yes, sir, at the park there, Wampole Park, 7 a.m., December 7th.
Okay, and you got 26.2 miles and 13.1 miles. How many people generally participate?
It can run anywhere from 800 to 1,200, 1,300 people.
And
quite a few.
Do more people run the full marathon or the half?
The latter, the half.
The half?
Mm-hmm.
Well,
but we get people from all over the country. I'm pretty well connected with the 50 States group. In fact, Steve Boone, who's head of that group out of Houston, will be there, and he brings in a lot of people. We've got a guy that's going to run, are you ready, 200 marathons this year.
This year?
A guy named Jim Simpson and another guy named Larry Macon, who I believe is general counsel for the San Antonio Spurs. Is it like at 170 or something for this year?
That's a marathon every other day and a little more than every other day. How can you do that without your body saying, no, stop?
I think you have to slow down when you're Jim's age. Jim's like 68, and he will literally, when he gets to Baton Rouge, have run something like 40 marathons in a row, one each day.
Now, is that good for you?
It depends. There's two theories of thought. Either makes you stronger or it kills you, one or the other. I never had a major injury till I was 53 years old, so I kind of go with the theory that it makes you a little bit stronger.
It certainly helps with weight control, doesn't it?
The reason I run is not because I like to run, it's because I like to eat, so yeah, mm-hmm. It helps.
How much do you weigh?
About 179 this morning.
179.
Right.
Right there under 180?
Yes, yes.
And you, Matt, you're a tall guy. How tall are you, Matt?
6'4".
6'4".
Same weight.
Same weight, you see?
And 179 pounds, which as marathon runners go, people who run in the time you do, that's you're a big guy for a marathon runner.
Yeah, I stand out at the front of the line there.
Most of these people who win are
120,
and usually not tall either.
5'6".
Yeah. Now this is something where women are very competitive with the guys. What's the best time for a woman, like in the Boston Marathon, what was the time, do you recall, this year?
It's usually close to 220, 225. Right. The world record's around 217. Mm-hmm.
And that compares with what?
203 for the men.
Okay, so we're talking 14 minutes,
right.
26 miles. And it's something that involves not only athletic skills, but all kinds of other things, including mind over matter.
Yes. There's a lot that can go wrong in 26 miles.
Yeah, and it's impossible, I would think, and I've run, but not 26 miles, and I've run a lot shorter distances and had pain and had to, you know, you have to run through it. When do you hit the wall when you're running 26 miles and you're trying to go as fast as you can?
What wall?
You don't hit the wall at all?
There's usually several.
Yeah.
Seems like halfway, 16, 20, 22. There's a few obstacles to go overcome.
And that happens every time?
More or less.
And you just keep doing this?
Yes.
Over and over again.
It's addictive.
And it's a good addiction, but these guys are doing it every other day. I'm not so sure about that, Craig.
I'm not so sure. When I saw Mr. Simpson, which was in Pensacola a couple weeks ago, he looks like skin and bones, but, you know, I talked to him. He says he's loving it. He said he's good with it.
But how do you have time for anything else other than preparing for the next run?
He lives in a truck, and he's got a camper on the back, and he lives in that truck.
I hope he has a shower somewhere.
I don't know what he does for showers. I really don't.
But 26.2 miles is a long way, and it's amazing that people can do it one time, much less as many times as the two of you have. But good luck, and for those who'd like to participate any particular way to let you know if they want to run come December 7th?
Just get on the website, www.brbeachmarathon.com. They can register there.
Thank you, Craig Watson. Thank you, Matt Manning. Good luck to both of you gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thanks for stopping by today, and I'm sure you'll be back on the road again very soon. We'll be back tomorrow. For Kevin Gallagher, I'm Jim Engster. Thank you for listening. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at wrkf.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.